Well, Dr. Fields, primaries can be a really confusing topic. So let's talk about definitions, because there are so many different kinds of primaries. What is an open primary?
I would be happy to answer that question, and I will. I just thought it would be helpful to try and add to clarifying this area of open primaries to start with the fundamental principle behind open primaries, which is the principle that every voter has the equal right to full access to voting in every stage of the elections without having to join a political party as a condition for having the right to vote. So in terms of starting with the basics, so a primary, as we know, is the first election. That means the first step in the election in deciding who will be on the ballot and who will be the winner of that election. So the primary is the first step. And elections are usually a two-step process, first the primary, then the general election. An open primary is a primary in which people can vote who are not members of the party. And they're overall, there are kind of two kinds of open primaries, which I think helps people to understand it if you use this sort of overall general framework of the broad categories. There are party-oriented open primaries, which are primaries that allow voters who are not registered in that particular party to participate in that party's primary election. So you could have a Democratic primary in which it's open and independents, Democrats, Republicans might be able to participate, or it could be an open primary that only allows registered Democrats and unaffiliated voters, or also called independents, to participate. There are these versions exist in different states, and this is the most common form of open primaries. So that's the party-oriented open primaries. And then there are non-party-oriented or non-partisan open primaries, which are also called top two open primaries. And there are very few of these. They exist in only about two states, in which state elections and congressional elections are open to all voters and all the candidates are on the ballot together. All parties are on the ballot. All voters vote together. And then the top two winners go on to the general election. So those are the kind of two overall broad categories of open primaries.
How does an open primary differ from a closed primary?
The difference is that closed primaries only allow the members of the party, people who are registered in that party, to vote in that primary. Most primaries are closed. I live in New York State, which is a closed primary state. All elections for state, for Congress, for president are closed. In New Mexico, all elections are closed. In Pennsylvania, all elections are closed. In Florida and many other states, New Jersey and other states. So that this is a partisan closed primary. It goes by party. And it turns out that in these closed primary states, really a very small percentage of voters, even in the party, participate in the primary, because the politicians learn to just reach out to the organized constituencies who are involved in supporting them and who they know. They reach out to them. They make sure they come out and vote. They win the primary, and then it's a foregone conclusion in many states that are most, but in which one party is dominant. Often, it certainly is the case in New York, the elected official doesn't have to even campaign after the primary because they're assured of winning the election because they've won the primary of the dominant party, and that disenfranchises other voters, not only unaffiliated voters, but also members of other parties.
It's a small percentage in a closed primary of the people who actually vote. So do you know the percentage of people who vote in the primary?
Yes. Well, in New York, it's it depends on the election and the year. In the last mayoral election, it was something like 20%. It's usually not higher than 20% of the members of the party who actually come out to vote. Many people don't vote in primaries, and there's not enough outreach and people, you know, to citizens, to the public in general, about the importance of voting in the primary. It's thought of as, in some communities, as not the real election.
And in open primary, what percentage of states have open primaries?
That's a very good question. So in terms of the nonpartisan open primary, the top two nonpartisan open primary, that form of open primaries is in California and Washington State for statewide elections and congressional elections. Those are the main states. And then Nebraska has a form of nonpartisan top two open primaries for state elections, for state legislative elections. And that is pretty much it. Other states, the most common election that we see open primaries in, the party-oriented open primaries where someone can choose to vote in either the Democratic or Republican primaries without being a member of the party, is in presidential elections. So there's about 23 states in 2016, and this changes from presidential election to presidential election. Every 4 years it somewhat changes. But in 2016, in this primary that just ended, there were about 23 states that allowed, in general, that allowed voters who are not registered in their party to vote in the primary. Some are more open than others. Some only allow unaffiliated voters to vote. In some, like New Hampshire, you have to come to the primary and actually join a party, pick a party to join, and then you can vote in that party's primary, and then you have to go through some other process to actually become an unaffiliated voter. And they only allow, in New Hampshire and others and many other states, they only allow unaffiliated voters, not people who are not, you know, who are registered in other parties to vote.
There are so many options. There's closed, there's open, there's mixed. Dr. Fields, how do closed primaries make it more difficult? I'm guessing it's more difficult for the voters and also the officials to cross party lines and kind of work things out.
It is more difficult in a closed primary system to build coalitions, and it's more partisan. So as you can imagine, the partisanship and divisiveness is fostered by the closed primary system in which there are parties battling for elected offices. And the way that the state legislatures and the political parties have designed our political process is that one party tends to dominate in particular states. So in New York, it's more in general the Democratic Party, certainly in New York City, that dominates. And then in a state like Nebraska, it's considered more a Republican-dominated state. But back to your question, so in this kind of closed primary system, you don't have an opportunity to bring different points of view together. You don't have an opportunity to bring together people who are registered in different parties, independents, Democrats, Republicans, third-party members, unaffiliated voters. There's no opportunity to do that. So you're not able to really build broad-based coalitions that are organized around different kinds of issues and can bring people together across party lines. And the elected officials are more beholden to the party boss. So there's this term in politics called being primaried, and people on the so-called right and people on the so-called left, are elected officials are concerned if they step too far out of their party partisan box that they may be primaried, that somebody may run against them in their primary, and if they lose their primary, then they've lost their public office, so they've lost the election. So that is often something that elected officials worry about. If they don't get the support of the party, of the party bosses, as it were, they don't get the support. If they don't get that support, then they may not get a good committee assignment. They may be ostracized in the legislature. And so it's a way of controlling the elected officials. And I think that it for me, I think the fundamental issue is that in the one example of this, many, many voters are excluded by closed primaries. So in the presidential election, in the primaries, there were 26 million people around the country who were not able to participate, most of them unaffiliated voters. They had no say in determining who was the winner of those primaries.
Jesse Fields, talk about how open primaries would reduce polarization.
Yeah, this is something that I feel very strongly about personally as an African-American woman and as someone who works in the Harlem community. I've been involved in efforts to bring together people, you know, across the political divides and across social divides and racial divides. And the great thing about open primaries, particularly the top two open primaries, but even in the party-oriented open primaries where parties allow others who are not registered in their party to vote, you have the opportunity to build coalitions. And for instance, around something like increasing the minimum wage or addressing social problems of education, which people across the board, I think, care about. And also, you can move away from the demonization of people who are not members of your party. If you deal with elected officials or you go to party events, you find that the way that they speak about others, non-party members or people who are members of the opposite party, is fairly negative and somewhat antagonistic and hostile, and as if we would never associate with those people. But open primaries gives you a structural foundation to begin to bring people together. I don't believe it's a panacea and will solve all of our problems around polarization and government dysfunction and the problems in our political process. But I do believe very strongly that it gives us a structure that supports having a context to then bring people together in unusual ways.
Yes, and how also would it affect the actual campaigning?
Well, you know, that's a great question, Suzanne. It means that the candidates who are running for office have to reach beyond their party borders. Some examples in California, which by initiative passed top two open primaries in 2010, and after the first election in California that was an open primaries, nonpartisan elections was in 2012. And in those elections, for the first time, incumbents lost. There were 10 incumbents who lost election for the first time. That hadn't happened in 10 years in California under the previous system. And so it meant that the candidates who were more successful in the primaries, and there's some specific examples, but the candidates who were more successful had to reach out, for instance, in the Democratic primary. I mean, Democratic candidates, not in the Democratic primary, but in the open primary, Democratic candidates had to reach out beyond the Democratic Party. So the incumbent Democrat in a state legislative race in 2012 in California actually ended up losing the election, and he had been in office for 40 years and had never faced a competitive election. The issue was that he only reached out to members of the Democratic Party. And he actually called his opponent, who was running against him, not a real Democrat, because that candidate was reaching out to Republicans and independents as well as Democrats. And it was an open primary election, and the candidate who reached out more broadly won the election and beat the 40-year incumbent. So it does require campaigning in a broader fashion than the elected officials are used to, and it makes the elections much more competitive.
Dr. Fields, a person might say, yeah, open primaries, that's a great idea that will never happen. What would you say to that person?
Well, I'd say that I think it really takes a grassroots movement. It is absolutely an uphill battle to win open primaries. It's not easy, but there are movements in different states for open primaries. So it usually comes into law by virtue of citizen initiatives that are put on the ballot, and ordinary voters pass it. That's how it became the law in California and in Washington State. And there are initiatives on the ballot in other states. In Colorado, in this year, in November, there'll be an open primaries initiative on the ballot. In South Dakota, there will be an open primaries initiative on the ballot, which is actually for a top two nonpartisan election system. There is a bill in Congress, which has been introduced by Congressman John Delaney of Maryland, which calls for open primaries in all congressional races, Congress and Senate, and it makes Election Day a federal holiday and sets up a process for redistricting reform, which is also a very, very important political reform of nonpartisan redistricting, which needs to be implemented and is also an uphill battle. So I think that it won't, if we leave it up to the status quo and to the current elected officials who have benefited from closed primaries, it is an uphill battle. However, we have won open primaries in California and Washington State. It's in Nebraska, as I said. And these initiatives, I think, may be successful. And I think the other phenomenon that's going on around the country that I think offers a hopeful sign is the fact that more and more Americans are leaving the Democratic and Republican parties. 43% of the country is now independent. More and more voters are saying, don't put me into a box. I don't want to be forced to vote for a party candidate. I want to vote for the best person, not for the party. And it's independents who are very diverse, that independents are across the political spectrum and come together around support for revitalizing our democracy, for opening up the process, for the people having more power than the parties. And I think that's a very hopeful sign. Independents are the most excluded by closed primaries, and they're the ones who support opening up the process much more, and they're becoming a majority of Americans.
Dr. Fields, I want to talk about rating, and that's an open primary where a person can cross their party lines. So let's say a Democrat can cross over to a Republican or the opposite. This happened in 2016 when I think Donald Trump supporters crossed over and voted for Bernie Sanders in West Virginia. I'm curious what you have to say about that rating.
It doesn't happen that often. But that's something that can happen in an open primary system. It also can happen now in a closed primary system by people registering into a party that they want to register into in order to cause some, you know, partisan interests or upset the what they think would be good for that party. So open primaries doesn't, you know, it hasn't been the case that we've seen that across the board in open primary states like in California or Washington. And I think the real problem is that not enough people are voting, not that people are crashing into parties to try and cause a negative outcome.
Dr. Fields, you have run for public office as an independent candidate.
Yes, I have.
What was your experience as an independent candidate?
Well, thanks for asking that question, giving me a chance to talk about that. I'm a physician. I'm not a politician, and I ran as a doctor. My experience running as an independent was really I enjoyed reaching out and to all different communities and talking to people, and I particularly enjoyed the experience of learning about people's lives and different points of view, and that I let that really inform my candidacy. My platform was really focused on political reform, some of the things that we've talked about, and also the need for citizens to be involved in their government and in committees and to really participate, and the need for diversity, for bringing different people together, people with innovative ideas. I also am on the board of directors of nonprofit organizations like, you know, the All Stars Project. We work with young people. We're doing very innovative after-school programs, and there's also work being done with trying to build positive police community relations that don't get a lot of attention because they're not really supported by political parties. They're completely outside of those arenas. But I think citizens can come together. My experience, when I ran, I explicitly said that I was not going to win the election. I ran for Congress in 2002 against Congressman Charles Rangel, which is a district that is a closed primary. And, you know, once the Democrat wins the primary, they don't have to campaign. There's only been two elected officials since Adam Clayton Powell, since that Harlem Congressional District was created in the 1940s. There's only been two people who've been in that seat, Adam Clayton Powell and Congressman Rangel. That's an example of how political disenfranchisement really affects the communities. I work as a physician. I, frankly, have done a lot of work in poor urban communities and the issues of social isolation, of the lack of really effective education and human development. I see that every day. And I wanted to impact on that. So I talked about those issues in my campaign, and I ran as a doctor, not a politician. And I said I wasn't going to win. I knew I couldn't possibly win as a grassroots candidate running against someone who'd been in office for 35 years. But that kind of frankness we don't see in elections. People are just running to win, to put their party in power, to win in office. But I think we have to put the people and the concerns of our communities and our country ahead of partisan interests. And that's fundamentally why I'm involved in electoral reform, is because I want to see much more of that in our process, in our political process. And I really believe that democracy can work and that we can make it work much, much better.
Dr. Fields, this has been so helpful. My last question is there anything else you want to say that you haven't said yet about open primaries or reducing polarization?
Well, I think that, yes, the thing that I wanted to say was to inspire everyone. I think that this current presidential election and the choices, which a majority of people really don't feel thrilled about, I think that I would like to let people know that there are other things going on in the country. There are grassroots movements, there are efforts in states around the country to bring people together, to open up our political process. And I would like to say that the strength of our democracy and the future of our democracy is not determined by this one election. We can still go forward and revitalize it and bring people together and get, you know, go beyond this divisiveness that we're seeing. And really, I think it's making a number of people sort of cynical and not want to participate. However, I would like to be a voice of inspiration that much more is going on. You don't have to just look at the presidential election. Look at what's going on locally in these different states and the movements of the American people to come together, which I believe in very strongly.
Dr. Jesse Fields, thank you so much.
You're very welcome, Suzanne. Thank you for having me on and give me the opportunity to speak about these important issues.